Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors meeting to order, time being a little after 9 o'clock, and March the 20th, time being 9 o'clock. We'll just call to order. Phil, would you join us in the flag?
Yes, so we can all stand, face the flag. Ready to begin?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a roll call, Shayla. A roll call. That's what the thing says. Sure.
Paul Jones.
Well, I'm not on the board.
Sullivan.
Here.
Director Pauly.
I'm here.
Here.
Director Fawcett.
Here.
And let the record know that Director Record and Director Corona are absent today. This being the time for public comments, any subject within the jurisdiction of EMWD, you're allowed 3 minutes. Having no speaker cards today, we'll move on to executive reports. Paul?
Morning, President Sullivan, members of the board. My written report's included in your board package. A couple of things I'd like to highlight on the updates for this week, early updates. We became of a bill that has been introduced, AB 1304, by Assemblymember Waldron, who represents the southwestern portion of our service area. The bill is a little bit unique insofar it deals with the ability and would authorize any water district that supplies potable water to enter into a contract with a Native American tribe to receive water deliveries from infrastructure project on tribal land. We reached out to the assembly member's office. She indicated that her staff indicated that this was a member-sponsored bill, that there's nobody specifically proposing this. However, in thinking about it, we have some concerns that it might be in conflict with the agreements that we have with the Pechanga tribe, particularly the extension of service area agreement, the settlement requirements, and other agreements that we have between the tribe that limit their ability to use that water off of the reservation lands. So we're doing a legal review of that right now. We've notified Metropolitan as well as Rancho California Water District and asked them to also look at those agreements. We did speak to the assembly member's office and staff. They were not fully aware of those agreements and asked us to compile information and send it over to their office to see if there's issues there. So we'll follow up on that, but we did want to give you a heads up that we were looking at that. On our bill, SB 414, the Small System Water Authority Act of 2019, we are in full gear right now. We're advancing the legislation. That bill, as you recall, addresses governance reform for small failing water systems with persistent drinking water violations and is co-sponsored by the California Municipal Utilities Association. The bill's been double referred, meaning it goes to two policy committees in each house. It is starting out on the Senate side, and we have our first hearing at Senate Governance and Finance on the 27th. Next week, Danielle Coates will be providing testimony along with others at that hearing. Our second hearing is scheduled for the Senate Environmental Quality Committee on April 3rd, so we have two hearings in a row. We have been working with both the committees and their staff who prepare the staff reports, answering a lot of questions, providing additional information. And the goal is to get a very clear staff report that's favorable to the bill. We've also been doing a lot of outreach. We have 15 support letters with no opposition. We had two additional support letters come in yesterday, so they can continue to move forward really quickly. AQUA has supported the bill with a request for a minor technical amendment. We have six other key agencies that have approved the bill or support for the bill, but are still submitting their letters. So we have a lot of support tumbling in for the bill right now. We've also updated our information fact sheet, and we have sample support letters that we're providing to all, you know, agencies and organizations to get their support. And it also supports, along with our bill, the trust bill, the Safe Drinking Water Trust Bill that AQUA and CMUA are proposing as an alternative funding source. And we have an information webpage on the bill and the water trust under emwd.org/better solution that went on live on March 1st. So we're doing a lot of outreach right now. This is the time that has to be done. And we're getting a lot of positive feedback regarding the legislation. Under items of interest to the board, EPA has announced that it is going to do a national initiative and create a national action plan for water reuse. And February 27th, the assistant administrator for EPA, Dave Ross, announced at a conference up in San Francisco that they were going to do this initiative. The initiative is intended to advance water recycling, and it's very interesting because EPA has typically not been in the forefront of water recycling in the federal administration. I had a chance to meet with Mr. Ross, with the executive director of the Water Reuse Association. They reached out to us and asked for our help in putting together the action plan, which I think is fantastic because it will be an industry-driven action plan. And the way we are going to be helping is we are going to do two facilitated workshops in which we will invite EPA staff. We'll bring in experts from around the country and try to inform the areas that they want to include in the plan, which would include federal support for advancing technologies, regulatory policy reforms, and financial incentives. And so we're looking at that. It's very exciting. They're going to complete the report this summer, and they'll have a draft issued at actually the September meeting of the Water Reuse Symposium in San Diego. So it's actually very fortunate. We have not engaged EPA so positively in water recycling, and we think there might be funding and other opportunities that engagement can provide. On groundwater replenishment activities, as I previously reported, due to the February floods, we had a number of our facilities knocked out. Our staff has done an extraordinary job bringing those facilities partially back online. Prior to the floods, though, we had captured about 1,460 acre-feet of diversions from the San Jacinto River into the Grand Avenue ponds. Some of the significant flood damage was actually the diversion structure and the channel leading to the Grand Avenue ponds. We're still working on restoring that. However, the Grand Avenue ponds have been back online, and we're putting imported water into the Grand Avenue ponds, and as well as two of the IRRP ponds have also been back online, and we're putting water into the IRRP ponds from Metropolitan. So we're actually, our flow rates are about 28 CFS right now, which is commendable. Since we started back on, we've been on for about a week, maybe?
Since March 8th.
We have about 364 acre-feet in the ground, and we're going to continue to take those deliveries. But I do want to commend Tony and Jeff and their staffs for doing a great job getting things back in order. And we'll continue to take those imported water deliveries. And Jeff will actually report on kind of the imported water supply conditions, which have really turned positive in the last month. And in that regard, Met is proposing a program to take to their board in April to encourage agencies to capture and store more imported water during this surplus condition. And it would authorize their general manager to enter into agreements with agencies for storage. The way the program is currently contemplated, it would provide an incentive of up to $225 an acre foot. Water would be taken and stored in the ground. This is water that's above your normal demand, so they create a baseline, or it could be stored in a surface water reservoir. And then when you extract that water out, which has to be done within 5 years, you would pay for the water at that time. So it's an incentive program, and the, up to $225 per acre foot is supposed to make you cost neutral on the program. So that's going forward. The Met staff is looking at some changes to that item. They're trying to expand the program a little bit to make increased participation, so they're looking at some other things, but that's going to come to the Met board in April. Director Record's very up to speed on this. We think it's positive. We're going to look at the economics and what we might be able to store in the Hamtramck Central Basin, but this might be a great opportunity to get a little bit more water and storage. So with that, unless there's any questions.
The water that we're putting in San Jacinto right now from Met, is that their commitment for the Saboba agreement, or is that surplus water?
Yes, it's the commitment for the Saboba agreement. It's the 2019 deliveries. There were some pre-deliveries of that last year. This was in there, so they're completing the 2019 delivery obligation, and then anything over and above that. This other program would be separate from that.
Good.
Any other questions or comments? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Laura, we have anything? Nick.
Director Sullivan, based on our conversation yesterday, as a follow-up, I thought I'd give the board a quick update on Niagara.
Please.
So Niagara Bottling Company, as I think you're all aware, approached us a few months ago, late last year, regarding a proposed facility that they wanted to site within the area. They're looking at a site off of Sherman Road, just south of Ethanac, just down the road here, city of Menifee. They're also looking at other sites in the region, and they're talking to other agencies, including Western. But they approached us, and through our development services group, we sat down with them to understand exactly what the proposed facility is. And conceptually, they're looking at a phased development, two phases. The ultimate phase would provide for a water capacity for the bottling facility of about 2.9 million gallons a day. That equates to about 6,500 equivalent meter sizes. So it's a significant facility using a significant amount of water. Based on that and our estimate of also their sewer capacity requirements, we're looking at an initial upfront connection, facility participation charge for water of about close to $35 million. Sewer would be in the order of about $300,000, $350,000. And in addition to that, they would need capacity in the Inland Empire brine line. And based on those capacities and their reject quantities, we estimate about $8.8 million connection to the brine line. So total connection fee of about $44, $45 million. Obviously, they took a big gulp when they realized the cost to connect to our system. And so there's been ongoing dialogue, and as I said, they're exploring a number of options. But we did offer to them a opportunity to have a third-party independent review of our connection cost methodology, and Charles Turner, working with Joe and Corey Wallace here, we developed a scope of work and identified a couple of consultants, Graftellas and Carollo, for a cost of approximately $20,000 to $25,000 to do an assessment analysis of a cost to be paid for by the developer, Niagara, in this case. And at this point in time, the ball is in their court. We've reached out to them recently to see if they want to have that independent assessment done of our cost. They just recently informed us about a week or so ago that they're still considering all their options, and at some point in time, we anticipate they might come back and take us up on that offer to do that independent assessment. So just wanted to make you aware of that. They've also been sharing their proposed plans with the city of Menifee, and we've had coordination meetings with the city to make sure that we're all on the same page and understanding of what they're looking for in the process going forward at this point in time. So if there's any questions on that, I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I had a question. You said 45 million gallons a day?
Actually, it's 2.9 million gallons a day.
2.2
million gallons a day.
To how many?
6,500 equivalent meter sizes. So, you know, that in comparison, that would be a significant development of residential development.
It'd be a small city.
Yeah. So it's a lot of water.
Just to be clear, ma'am, did you hear it correctly? The proposal would be for them to pay the $25,000, not our ratepayers, correct?
Correct.
Okay, just to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So as we hear more, we'll let you know.
Thanks, Nick.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Joe.
Good morning. How's it today?
Jeff.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Paul asked me to update the board on our state, regional, and local water supply conditions, so I prepared a presentation, and given the busy agenda this morning, I will not do my best not to repeat what Paul's already related to. So just basically, I wanted to go through, again, state, local, and regional conditions, and then kind of discuss more of our particulars with our system and our operations that are going on today. I'll discuss the water pack, the snowpack, and the water rainfall in the Sierras, as well as along the Colorado River Basin. And then I'll talk about the local reservoir condition, both DWR reservoirs, Metropolitan Water reservoirs, and then the ABC reservoirs. Paul already talked about MWD's actions, and there's a couple other little points that I'll mention, and then a brief update on our recycled water system. So you gentlemen have all seen this exhibit. This is what Paul spoke to in the last board meeting. This report is current as of March 11th. So I focus your attention to the upper right-hand corner where it starts and talks about this state water project allocation to Metropolitan Water District was at 35%. I just got an email here a half hour ago that Met has been told verbally it's going to go up to 70% based on the DWR measurements of the snowpack and the rivers up north. So that's extremely good news. Interesting part of that to understand is because we had a really wet year in 2017, Met's allocation, they're anticipating it, even though it's extremely wet winter and a lot of rainfall and good snowpack conditions, they don't anticipate going any higher than 75% by the sheer fact that they've got nowhere else to put the water. So that's really largely why they're ramping up that cyclic problem that the general manager described. So looking at this semi-old data, a couple weeks old, state water is at 160%, again, prior to this morning's news, and I don't have those updated numbers. The snowpack is looking really good, 160%. Rainfall is extremely strong. Southern Sierra and Northern Sierra both are in very, very strong positions now with regard to snowpack. If you look at that center graph there with the upper right corner of those four graphs, you can see that red line represents the water content of the snowpack. So it's not only a lot of snow, but it's also good water content. It's not a light, fluffy snow. There's a little good water content in there. So as it melts, it's going to produce a lot of additional water well into the year to continue to fill reservoirs and rivers downstream. So that's very good news. Looking at the upper Colorado River Basin, also very good news. Again, this is as of March 11th. The snowpack in the upper Colorado River Basin is at 133% of normal, and the water rainfall is at 124% of normal. So those are normal. Those are very good numbers as well. And you can see in the bottom right-hand corner is a graph pointing to the water content in that basin, and it's also trending very, very well for the region. And that's important because of conditions that you've all read and heard about with regard to the lake levels in Lake Powell and Lake Mead. Just right now, Lake Powell is sitting at 9.28 million acre feet. That number has not moved because they're letting water go on through to try to raise the level of Lake Mead. Lake Mead, as of March 11th, was at 10.68 million acre feet, or 41% of average. So that 41% has just ticked up a couple percentage points since a few weeks back. Lake Mead level is extremely important to the region, including Southern California. There are some drought contingency plans in place that have some trigger levels that would require different actions on part of the different parties. In particular, Arizona, as well as Southern California. We have a very senior, Metform has very senior water rights in the river, and that's good news. The level of the lake has risen a couple feet. It's up to 1,089 right now. If you looked at that lake level a year ago, it was, I think, below 1,075, and it implemented a trigger level for the state of Arizona, whereby they had to start taking reductions in water deliveries from the river. So it's gone back above that threshold trigger level, but it's probably going to drop below that number again later this year. The good news is we do not believe, or Met staff does not anticipate, that that trigger level will be reached, where the second trigger level, whereby Met would be required to take reductions in their deliveries from the river by the end of the year. So they're presuming that they're going to continue to store more water in Lake Mead, help sustain that water level, and allow the end of the lake to lower to 1,045 feet. If it does go below 1,045, then Met would be looking at enacting different components of the water supply contingency plan to include reductions in water to Southern California. This slide is just a real quick graphic of both metropolitan and state water reservoirs. As you can see, they're all doing really well. They're near full. I think the lowest is Lake Skinner at 85% and the State Lake at 82%. Those are kind of, Skinner could be filled up in a very short order. Met's continue to bring water south at a high rate. Castaic Lake kind of serves as like a equalization basin as they have these large flows coming from north down to south. They maintain a little bit of freeboard in that lake to be able to move water around in the LA basin. So all those lakes are in really good shape right now, and we're being told they'll be topped off by the end of the snow melt season for sure. So Metropolitan's water supply allocation I mentioned was 35%. That number is now 70%. I just did a real quick calculation. That corresponds to 1.39 million acre feet of water allocated to metropolitan water districts. So that's extremely good news. I would also add that the Department of Water Resources a couple weeks back declared Article 1 Article 20 conditions, and that's a declaration that they make when they observe very strong snowpack, very heavy rainfalls, and more importantly, very, very strong river flows up in the Delta area. So Article 21 conditions have been declared, and what that does is it allows them to start looking for ways to take advantage of those high river flows and put that water in other places where it can be stored for the summer or future years. And because of that, that's why Met is now proposing to enhance their cyclic storage program, whereby, as Paul discussed, the general manager would have authority to enter into agreements in a very short order and start bringing that water south and put in the basins as well as surface reservoirs as quickly as they possibly could. Looking at the local lakes, all the local lakes, two of the four local lakes, Canyon Lake and Lake Hemet, both are at their spillways, hovering right there. On the day of the Valentine's Day storm, Mike Gow, the general manager for Lake Hemet, reported that Monday before the Valentine's Day storm, Mike Gow reported that Lake Hemet was at 121 feet elevation, or depth from spilling. The spill depth would have been 135 feet, so it filled up 14 feet in one day. By the end of Valentine's Day storm, the lake was spilling. He reported a foot an hour, which is just incredible to think about. Lake Elsinore has come up just a little bit, and Bell Lake as well has also seen an increase, but I'm being told by Rancho staff they don't anticipate that this winter is going to be strong enough in Southern California to basically top off that lake, but it is still increasing. This is the graphic that was presented to the Henderson Center Water Master Board back on February 25th. And the great takeaway here, I have a report, is agencies and the cities all began to start curtailing their groundwater activities in 2012. In 2018, each agency, per the program and per the judgment, had reduced their groundwater base, or had taken a final reduction in the groundwater production rights in 2018. And the good news is you see that blue line slanting down toward the right, and then to the period where the red line is where the water master action started taking place, you can see the red line is starting to show that the overdraft has started to subside. So it doesn't mean that we're entirely there, but it's extremely good news, and The Water Minister, technical advisor, is indicating that we probably will not have any future reductions in our base groundwater collection rights for the foreseeable near term. I'm kind of reading that to be at least 35 years. If the line continues to stabilize, I don't anticipate there being any further reductions. So Paul talked largely about a lot of activities to put our damaged recharge ponds back into service at both the integrated recharge and recovery ponds off of Ramona, or I should say it's kind of an extension of Esplanade out toward the river in Washington, kind of between, right in between those two streets, as well as the Grand Street facility. We've had a lot of work going on in there, and happy to report that we're actively recharging and working toward the goal of being able to take our maximum of 42 CFS probably by the end of April. Looking at our recycled water supplies, we are currently discharging excess water because we're recovering close to our goal of our storage. This graph is a little bit old. Our current recycled water in storage right now is right around 2.1 million gallons of water. The dashed green line that represents the goal for staff to kind of hit a new peak in water and storage. The closer we get to that dashed line, which is the line representing our ponds are full, the more difficult it gets to operate as we're trying to force different volumes of water in different directions in our system. But the goal is to, again, exceed what we've done in the recent few years in terms of topping off those ponds. So in summary, the state water project supplies are doing really, really well, substantially above average. The rainfall and snowpack in the Upper Colorado River Basin is also very favorable, helping to improve some of those conditions in that system. Metropolitan had budgeted to store 900,000 acre feet within Lake Mead. It's looking like now they're going to store at least 1 million acre feet, if not 1.1 million acre feet. So we'll learn more about that in the coming probably 2 to 3 weeks. Metropolitan and DWR's reservoirs are both in very good shape and should be full by the end of the snowmelt season or late summer. MWD is actually seeking locations to store that surplus Article 21 water. Our groundwater levels in the Hemet Sandstone Basin appear to be stabilizing, which is excellent news. And our recycled pond storage and conditions are favorable with regard to water supply. And so we're doing all we can to minimize that discharge. We're hoping to maybe be able to turn it off here within a couple of weeks. I checked the weather. It looks like we have a 60% chance of rain today, a lower chance of a storm coming in next week. That will obviously determine what our plans are for future discharge in the near term. And we have reached out to the Rancho California Water District to see if they would like to have some of that surplus water. Last opportunity, they were concerned with their storage levels, and they declined to take excess water. But we will do that again here probably in the coming week. Any questions?
Jeff, on the Saboba water, so they're asking us to take all our 19 allocation, correct? And some of our 20?
Yes.
What's the time frame on?
So
how fast can we do that?
We're currently taking the allocation from the current year. We had already taken about 3,500, and we got 4,000 more of that allocation to take. So we're going to work on getting all that water underground here within probably the next, 5-6 months at the outside. And then from that, we're going to be reaching out to the cities as well as Lake Hemet and the private pumpers to see if they would all want to participate in taking pre-delivered water from Metropolitan to 7,500 acre feet. So that's discussions that are ongoing in the coming weeks here with those parties.
Okay.
So if they didn't want to take it, can we use that for the Saboba allocation for 2020?
Yes, so those are kind of discussions we're having in terms of, do we take advantage of that water? Can we do that and apply it to our credits? Or ultimately, do we enter into a cyclic program where we feel that internally we believe that that's something we can do within our own jurisdiction without the approval of the Water Master Board? We don't believe it's a requirement of that judgment.
Okay.
So we're kind of evaluating the economics of that.
I would add that typically the participants will budget for the 2020 allocation as of the start of July 1st of 2018. So the cities and Lake Hemet, as well as us, will have the budget typically for the 2020 delivery starting July 1st. And based on the timeline that Jeff shared, we will not likely get into 2020 deliveries till after July 1st of this year.
So is Rancho taking Western water? They just don't want our water?
I'm not aware of that.
I'm surprised they don't want to bank some water because it's...
They have indicated they want to continue in that cyclic program.
So yeah, they were in the cyclic program. Previously, they have a cyclic storage agreement that's approved by Metropolitan.
So they imported about 1,700 acre-feet of raw water from Metropolitan that they recharge in the Paba Basin. So they're looking at additional opportunities this year, both raw water as well as potentially in-loop cyclic treated water, as Paul mentioned earlier, that Met may be making available later this year.
Okay.
In that agreement, I'm told from Met staff, we already have the cyclic agreement between ourselves, Metropolitan, and Rancho. If certain actions are approved, we could have that by letter extension of additional supplies signed and approved.
Right, because the core agreement's been approved.
Okay. All right. Any additional questions?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
Mr. President, I did forget to provide one update.
Sure.
If I may. We're very pleased to announce that after an extensive recruitment process, we have extended an offer of employment to Ms. Lanaya Vols of CDM Smith, and she's accepted the position. Lanaya is a vice president of CDM, and over the last 20 years, she's been involved with numerous complex water supply initiatives throughout Southern California, including Orange County's groundwater replenishment program, as well as our own purified water program and our water supply strategic plan. We're very excited. We're very eager to have her join our team. Her starting date will be April 29th. So we'll definitely, you'll see more of Lanaya as soon as she joins on April 29th. Separately, I wanted to share with you that Elizabeth Lovestead, our Director of Water Supply Planning, has decided to accept an offer with the San Diego County Water Authority. Her last day with the MWD will be April 3rd. We wish Elizabeth the best of luck with her new endeavor. We have just initiated the recruitment process to fill that position as well.
Thank you. Seems like we're a great executive training ground. Okay, with that, we'll go to agenda item 3, which is a consent calendar. We'll accept a motion and a second for approval of items 3A through 3O, unless anybody wishes to pull one.
I'll make a motion to approve the consent calendar.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. With that, we'll go to agenda item 4, which is information, or the action calendar, I'm sorry. Number A, to approve and authorize a 2-year as-needed plan, checking services agreements in the full term, not to exceed a total of $2,325,000.
President Sullivan, Dan Howell is going to cover these items, and I'm, with the board's permission, I'd like to have him cover A, B, C, and D. Those are all as-needed contracts.
Can we do those all in one group?
Yes.
Okay.
If I could, we could cover A through C.
Okay.
And Chris Teague, our contracts manager, will present those, and I'll present item D following his
Thank
presentation.
You.
Thank you.
So we can do
all of those.
Mr. President, members of the board, good morning.
Morning.
First, we'll give a background regarding the district's as-needed consultant selection process. Contract staff issue solicitation for as-needed services on a 2-year cycle. The district has roughly 20 as-needed service categories, ranging from the engineering services we're discussing today, as well as items such as information technology and environmental consulting. The purpose of the as-needed selection process ensures that the district has qualified consultants and we issue assignments or task orders in a timely manner. Task orders, each less than $100,000, are for specific projects and support services and are separately approved and authorized in accordance with district policy. Additionally, the list of as-needed consultants serves as a pool of qualified candidates for other larger projects greater than $100,000. The district follows a systematic process which demonstrates our diligence and transparency in selecting consultants to perform professional services. So now I'll get into the specifics of item A and B and C. The as-needed services covered today represent the most significant categories of service in terms of the number of disciplines, as well as the awards and requested dollars. In order to diversify the district's consultant base, the number of consultant awards were limited to two disciplines within each category of service. So using the engineering design category as an example, if consultant A and consultant B were selected for pipeline design and water storage and conveyance, they wouldn't be selected for lift station design or electrical, even though they may be well qualified for those disciplines. This practice ensures the best ideas, approaches, and methodologies are considered for each project. All three solicitations were released in November 2018, and more than 80 proposals were received in late December and in early January. 27 evaluators representing a significant cross-section of district staff use standard evaluation criteria like firm qualification, personnel qualifications, experience, safety record, price, and payment terms, as well as local office. The current agreements are set to expire March 31st, 2019, and actual expenditures range from roughly 75% to 90% of what the board approved 2 years ago. Staff requesting a slightly higher amount, roughly 2.5% for this next two-year period versus the current period. And those requested funds are primarily driven by the schedule work identified in each board letter. Unused funds do not carry forward into new two-year terms. So with that, and for your consideration, item A, plan check services. There are three disciplines: linear pipelines, water booster station and storage facilities, as well as sewer lift stations. So staff is requesting that the board approve and authorize seven agreements with the firms identified in the board letter to perform services over the two-year term and a not-to-exceed amount of $2.325 million. Item B, as-needed engineering non-design services, also has three disciplines of service, so field survey, geotechnical, and facilities planning. Of note, 80% of these firms are local to the district service territory or Riverside County. So again, the recommendation is that the board approve and authorize 21 agreements with the firms listed in the board letter over a two-year full-term amount of $2.3 million. And then finally, item C, for as-needed engineering design. There are five disciplines of service in this category. So we've got pipelines, potable and recycled water storage and conveyance, sewer lift stations, electrical, and structural engineering. So staff are requesting that the board approve and authorize 21 agreements in the amount of $1.95 million. So again, these agreements, category amounts, are only estimates for task orders of $100,000 or less. If it's more than $100,000, we'd have to come back to the board for approval. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I don't have any questions. These are pretty thoroughly presented at Option Engineering.
Right.
And we can take this as one action.
I'll make a motion to approve items 4, A, B, and C.
I will second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent.
Thank you, Chris.
Okay, 4D. Dan.
Great, thank you. For consideration also this morning is item D. This is a recommended up to a six-year contract with Liquivision Technologies to perform underwater tank inspection and cleaning services for the district. bit of a unique and somewhat a fun contract to deal with. And somewhat different from our other up to 5-year agreements, this is for a proposed 6-year term. And that's because our tanks are tested on a 3-year cycle. So of the 92 potable water storage tanks that are inspected under these services and 5 recycled water tanks, they are inspected by the recommended provider on a 3-year cycle, and hence we are requesting a recommended 6-year term so we can get 2 full complete versions of the inspection. The recommended contractor provides internal inspection of the tanks. They have certified divers. They go into these tanks. They photograph, they document, they inspect, and they provide detailed reports to the Water Operations Department of conditions found. And importantly, those reports can be compared to prior years' studies and reports to identify any changes in the structural integrity of these tanks and the supporting structure within those. It's a very detailed process. The testing is done in accordance with the National Association of Corrosion Engineers. And again, those reports can be utilized over multiple years to compare conditions of the tanks over the long term. So referring to our request for proposals number 3137, we received 8 proposals. Those are identified on Exhibit A to the board letter. And within that, 4 of the firms that submitted were really within the competitive range. The pricing was actually quite tight amongst those 4 firms, ranging from a total combined over the 6-year term of $627,000 through $794,000 amongst those 4. There were some of the outliers of the other firms. Not all of those firms are in the primary business of underwater tank inspection, and I think that speaks to some of the range and pricing that we experienced. LiquiVision is the district's current provider. They've been providing us with service since approximately 2005. They have 24 years of tank inspection and cleaning experience, and our estimated annual costs, each of the 92 potable water storage tanks and the 5 recycled water storage tanks are priced individually through the RFP. We anticipate expenditures based on the existing number of tests at $109,500 per year for a total of $657,000 recommended over the 6-year term. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Do you have questions, Dan?
I have no questions.
I'll make a motion to approve item 4D, Mr. President.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. Go to agenda item 4E.
Corey.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. The Indian Street Recycled Water Pipeline, this project was initially coordinated through a project participation agreement with the developer of the Moreno Valley Industrial Center in 2014, whereby the district would reimburse them for those costs. With unacceptable construction bids received by the developer, the district made a decision to separately lead that construction effort at a later time. The district recently advanced this project to construction for a couple of reasons. To complete the gap section of pipeline south of Andina as part of a recycled water master plan to expand the recycled water distribution pipeline network in the North Paris logistics area, which is east of the March Air Reserve Base. And that will initiate conversions of several irrigation areas along Indian Street and Groveview Road that are currently using potable water for landscape purposes. The district received 10 construction bids ranging from $250,000 to approximately $624,000. G.J. Gentry was the lowest responsive bidder, and their bid was approximately $95,000 less than the engineer's estimate of $345,000. Their references have been checked. They have done work not particularly for EMWD, but for other jurisdictions and developers within our service boundaries. And the recommendation today is to approve and authorize the execution of the construction contract with G.J. Gentry. The Administrative Award of Ancillary Agreements for Services During Construction, and the additional appropriation of $374,700. With that, I could answer any questions.
have no questions.
We'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve item 4E.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. 4F is to approve and authorize award of contract to Jacobs for $305,699 for the design of the Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility, TEPS, Tecogen Engine Emission Control Project, and additional appropriation of $137,900 for a total project cost of $359,900. Mark.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. So, agenda here, back to talk a little bit about the project itself, the selection process we went through, the scope of the work that we'll be covering for this effort, and then our recommendations and schedule. Our Temecula Valley Regional Water Reclamation Facility, located in Temecula, it includes the facility, our tertiary effluent pump station, our TEPS facility, which was constructed back in 2001, and this is our primary facility for distributing that recycled water we produce at the plant to our recycled water distribution system. And so as part of this project effort in terms of upgrading our facilities, we need to essentially address the need to comply with our AQMD Rule 1110.2 emission requirements. And so these TEPS engines are going to be ultimately converted to be able to utilize digester gas and natural gas in the future, and that will essentially be one part of our various project plans in terms of utilizing our available digester gas. So quickly, a background here on the project. The actual project itself includes the retrofit of the two existing gas engines with a Tecogen emission control system. We'll also be installing a gas blending unit, and we'll be, as you see there in the photograph, there's an existing shade structure that will need to be modified to accommodate all the equipment that will be installed as part of this project. So it's a fairly substantial effort to add the additional equipment and modify that structure which covers the existing facility. So in order to do this work, the consultant will need to prepare the actual design for the emission control system itself, or to install Tecogen technology. And then we'll also be preparing the design for the fuel blending system, and also the structure itself, the structural requirements for that sunshade structure that will be ultimately installed to handle the equipment. And they will also provide engineering services during the bidding. We send out a request for proposal to six firms. As shown here on the slide, the team Jacobs was evaluated with a selection panel consisting of the engineering operations groups, potential group, reviewed the proposals and determined that Jacobs was the best team for this effort. They scored the highest, and their proposed fee was $305,000, which is very similar to some of the other firms that came in, so we felt very comfortable with their approach. They have the right team. They're also the consultant who's doing the digester gas beneficial use study currently, so they'll be able to integrate a lot of the work that they're currently working on right now that will essentially feed this facility in the future. So the recommendation is to proceed with Jacobs for this effort. The schedule will be that we award the project immediately and proceed in, forward with the design in April, and the intent is to complete the design by February 2020. Recommendations approve and operate an agreement with Jacobs for $305,699 to perform the engineering design for this project, and also the administrative award of all necessary contracts with consultants and suppliers for the completion of this work, and an additional appropriation of $138,000 to bring the total project cost up to $360,000 to fund this project through its completion. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? With that, we'll...
I'd move to approve.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. Agenda item G, which is adopt a proposed resolution of issuance of the Board of Directors of Eastern Municipal Water District, acting as the legislative body of Community Facilities District 2013-63, which is Atherton and Terracina, authorizing the issuance of 2019 special tax bonds and approving bond documents as to form. Charles.
Good morning. As you just read, this is an action for Community Facility District 2013-64. This item is involving a development in the southern area of Temecula. It's property development being conducted by Lennar, the primary developer, and they've had a lot of growth in the region recently. And then this project is continuing to help in advancing that and continuing that development. CFD was formed for purposes of funding sewer fees and facilities. And when we did form this in 2015, it was with the intent that eventually it would develop and we'd be able to issue bonds to reimburse the developer for their investments. At this time, Lennar has requested that we do conduct a bond sale and that we would be able to finance those facilities. This area, again, is in the southern Temecula area. It's on El Chamizal Road, just north of Anza. And there's a map that's in part of the staff report if you'd like to see the detail. The development is called the Terracina Development. There's two product lines, the Marabella and Toscana area development. As of now, there's individuals own 192 completed homes, and the developer owns 126 lots. With six model homes and 62 production units are under construction. This was as of January 1st. I've understand that we've had 20 additional home sales since January 1st. So it's continuing to grow, develop pretty rapidly, and get absorbed into the community. So with that, the developer still owns a large portion of the development. And as part of our policy, we would require a letter of credit from that developer if they have more than 20% of the special tax. And so Lennar has posted a letter of credit for us, and it satisfies all of our credit concerns. This development also meets all of our debt policies, including a value to lien in excess of 4-1. And this community is 11 times value to lien. And the delinquency rate is well below the 5% threshold. They're at 0.98%. And effective tax rate would be 2% with a total number of lots of 318. So it meets all of our criteria for this development. This financing is projected to be about $8.3 million bond sale. The underwriter would be Stifel Nicholas, and our financing team members are here, the Web Financials, as well as Fieldman Rollup as our municipal advisor here. And they've done a lot of work to put together the documents that you have before you. And the overall true interest cost for this financing would be roughly 4.3%, still very favorable interest rates for the community, and keeping a reasonable financing cost for that community to build all of the sewer infrastructure. So with that, we're here to answer any questions you might have, and our request is that you approve our resolutions of the issuance for the bonds, approve the substantial form of our trust indenture, our bond purchase agreement, our continuing disclosure agreement, the preliminary official statement, and authorize executives to be able to execute this transaction. The schedule is that we would move forward with this with adoption in April. We'd be able to price and close these bonds expeditiously. So with that, happy to answer any questions you have.
Any questions?
I move adoption of the resolution under item 4G.
I will second it.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries with Director Record absent, and along with Director Corona. H will approve and authorize the adjusted special benefit area fee for the Paradise Meadows Reservoir.
Good morning again. I am very pleased to present this request today. This request for the adjusted SBHB it represents a culmination of several years of coordination and partnering with Brookfield Homes to construct regional water and sewer facilities within the Audie Murphy Ranch development in the city of Menifee. Adrian Peters, representing Brookfield, is in the audience today. The Paradise Meadows... Paradise Meadows 5-million-gallon reservoir is the most recent and significant potable water storage addition in the Paris South 1620 pressure zone. It represents approximately 60% increase in potable water storage in that zone. So it is something, and I believe the city of Menifee is looking to brand that reservoir with their logo here recently, or coming up here. The joint participation by the developer and Eastern comprises the developer's contribution, which whereby they led and funded the reservoir site development, and Eastern's contributions represent the district's lead and funding of the reservoir construction or the tank construction. And in addition, the district provided financial contributions towards the oversizing of that reservoir, so the developer, their needs were less than 2 million gallons, and the remainder was considered oversized. The SBA fee payments are intended to reimburse both the developer and EMWD for their respective financial contributions towards the construction, and the reservoir was completed in late 2017. So this exhibit, which is part of the presentation in the board package, just represents the two participating properties within the Audie Murphy Ranch development. They're labeled Audie Murphy Ranch North and Audie Murphy Ranch South. Those straddle Newport Road, generally between Getz Road and Murrieta Road. The reservoir site was constructed on the south end of Audie Murphy Ranch South, and the developer's participation was involving the grading and drainage structures associated with that site. In late 2018, the reconciliation project happened with actual cost. The district initiated a third-party certification of both the developer's actual cost as well as Eastern's actual cost towards this construction. And the key takeaways from this effort, great news, the total reservoir project costs were significantly lower than the estimated costs, approximately 27% lower, which reduced the developer's share as well as the district share for the oversizing and additional contributions. The adjusted SBA fee of $2,135 per lot is a 42% reduction over the pre-reconcile fee. So this considers the EMWD oversizing proportion as well as SBA fee payments and credits collected to date. The proposed SBA fee adjustment is supported by Brookfield, and that is the request today, is to for the board to approve and authorize the adjustment to the SBA fee for the Paradise Meadows Reservoir, consistent with the reconciled project cost and the provisions of the participation agreement dated January 7th of 2016. So with that, if there are any questions, I can answer.
Do you have any questions?
It's good we could.
I just know that Adrian's here. Adrian, do you have any comments you'd like to make? Thank you. You've been sitting here for a while, so might as well, now is your time to start.
Good morning, Ron and members of the board and staff. Thank you. Just want to offer my thanks to the team for working with us over the last, seems like 5 years now, to make it a reality. We finally got the cost reconciled, and so one thing I do ask is I really do not like the idea of a sign on that tank. I think the color that we picked, the tan buffalo color, because, you know, 9 or 10 months out of the year, it matches the hillside behind it, and I'm not in favor of that idea. Hopefully it does not happen, but, you know, the city will do what the city will do. But anyway, again, thank you to the team. A lot of hard work, a lot of time went into it, and Nick and Paul, you were in a lot of those meetings. So I'm glad it came in under budget, and we're looking forward to reconciling our sewer facilities on the north side of Audie Murphy. We're going to be working with Harrison Associates on that as well. So looking forward to, again, working with the team. So thank you.
Thank you. And I just want to also thank Adrian. It's really enjoyable to work with a developer in our community that's so organized and professional. It's just really appreciate the partnership on the project. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Good luck with the city.
I will note for the record, though, we do have a signed policy for our tanks, correct? And that will be reviewed?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay. We have a motion.
I'll make a motion to approve the item.
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. With that, we will go to agenda item I, which is the express support, if amended, to AB 1220, which is Garcia of Bell Gardens, Metropolitan Water District representation.
Thank you, President Sullivan, members of the board. This is a little bit of a unique item. We're bringing this legislation to you to and are recommending that you express support. The legislation is unique because it deals with the membership on the Metropolitan Water District Board of Directors. Central Basin Municipal Water District has introduced the bill has sponsored the bill, and it was introduced through Assemblymember Garcia late last February. The issue at hand that the bill addresses is the Metropolitan Water District Board seats, the number of board seats, is and voting entitlement are determined by assessed valuation. As assessed valuations increase in some of the more affluent and larger areas in Met service area, the relative assessed valuation in an area like Central Basin, which is an extremely disadvantaged community, has gone down, such that the Central Basin, who currently has two seats on the Met board, is at risk of losing one of those seats. The way the seats are calculated is each Met member agency is entitled to one seat on the Met board. For every 5% of assessed valuation, so if you have 5.001% of assessed valuation, you get a second seat. If you have 10.001 of assessed valuation, you get a third seat, etc. And so the argument Central Basin has made on this is because they are a disadvantaged community, they would lose representation and be underrepresented on the Met board, even though if you look at their population in their service area, they're well more than the 5% level. So the bill as they introduced it would introduce population as well as assessed valuation as a metric under the Met Act to be able to choose or select the number of board seats. Now, it would not be used for voting entitlement. Voting entitlement under their legislative proposal would still be best based on assessed valuation. This would only be used, the population metric, for choosing the number of, or selecting and determining the number of board members. The way the bill was originally written, it would allow an agency to choose between either population or assessed valuation to make that determination. The concern with the bill is that there's substantial uneasiness among the Met member agencies about putting a population metric in the Met Act. Although it's pretty innocuous to look at it in terms of determining the number of board seats, other Met agencies are concerned that there may be pressure subsequently to then use population as a voting entitlement metric by future legislation. So it has potential unintended consequences, and also the uncertainty of the size of the Met board and relative to population and population changes. So this bill was introduced. We met with Central Basin staff. They asked to meet with us. We proposed an alternative amendment that basically would not include or introduce the population metric. If their objective is to keep the number of board seats, we suggested that they do a very short amendment to the Met Act that says as of this year or this date that no agency goes below their current number of board seats. That way you don't have the unintended consequences of potentially introducing the population metric. So that was discussed among the Central Basin Board. They discussed it with the bill's author, Christina Garcia. They like that approach. They met with Metropolitan Water District Executive Management. They also are supportive of that approach. So an item came to the Met Board at its last meeting to support the bill, if amended, to include this approach of just creating a floor for the number of bets of met seats and not going into introducing the population metric in any way. That was voted unanimously by the Met Board to support with that amendment. Director Record is our representative, is also very supportive of this. But it is, since this is kind of an unusual thing, it isn't covered under our policy principles that we do for legislation annually. I wanted to bring it back to the board, inform you of kind of the background on it, and suggest that we take a support position. It will have no effect on our MET seats and, of course, many of the other MET member agencies. It wouldn't affect them either. Any questions on this? So what we're proposing is a support position, if amended, as we've proposed.
Yeah, I'm probably for it, but I just don't see the advantage other than you have another director, because they always vote when you count anything. It's always on assessed valuation.
If that's why it's not an issue, I think that's substantial, but to them it's very important. And I think there was a concern that they would go to Sacramento with other agencies and say, hey, Metropolitan's not responsive to the disadvantaged communities in its service area. It's taking away board seats. And I think to avoid that, this was a compromise proposal. Stephen, did I miss anything on this? You are familiar with this issue.
Does it lock in in perpetuity?
The floor, not the cap. So in other words, if an agency on the other side is close to hitting 5% of assessed valuation and goes over 5%, you do get another board seat. So it doesn't...
But no one would lose.
No one would lose. And there's only, I think, Central Basin is close, and I don't think there are other agencies that are particularly close at this time, but it would protect kind of a minimum number of board seats.
And so it would result in additional board members...
Possibly. It could over time, yes.
Okay. All right. Met likes it.
Yeah, Met likes it. They're the ones that have to live with it.
I imagine they figure they can govern that. Okay. With that. Okay.
Director Bolly, do you have a question on this?
No question. As long as it doesn't affect us in any way and stop us from ever gaining another MET seat.
No, it doesn't. And where that was one of the things we were very clear on is also we did not want the population metric brought in because other agencies are closer to gaining MET seats on population. There were a number of unintended consequences with the bill.
I mean, I look at the future and realize we're only 40% built out, and at some point in the future, we probably will have another MET seat. So
absolutely.
I want to make sure that we... always you're protecting ourselves. So with that, I'll second the motion.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries unanimously with Director Record and Corona absent. With that, before we launch into finance, let's take a 10-minute break.